Welcome to Local Talk Tuesday, where we explore the people, places, stories, and events of our central Iowa community. Thank you for tuning in. I am Mike Metz, your host for the hour, along with our Milford Township neighbor, Pat Schlerbaum, and engineer Mike Murphy. And because KHOI is the heart of our Iowa community, Anna Magnuson, alias Anna Banana, is with us, and later in the hour, she will share her heart-to-heart and tune-in Tuesday messages. Pat, you know, our KHOI Sam Wormley has just joined us. Hey there, Sam. How are you?
Well, hello, Mike, and hello, Pat, and hello, Anna.
Howdy, Sam.
Say, Sam, we're approaching the influenza season, and so, as it will be upon us soon, we are still experiencing the COVID-19 pandemic, so we're getting a double whammy again this year. What are some of the most current safety practices that we need to incorporate to keep others in our community as well as ourselves safe as we venture out?
Before I tell you what those are, I want to say that the flu reduction last year in 2020-2021 was a good thing. There were many fewer cases because people were masking for the pandemic. But it could mean that flu will hit harder than normal this winter, and this is because much of the immunity that people develop comes from the fact that they had the disease the previous year. And there are many other respiratory viruses that we have to think about. So some of the things that we should do are get your annual flu shot.
Exactly, and those are available right now. I've gotten mine.
Avoid large crowds. And note that most of us catch flu from our family members. It would be good to wear a mask, especially if you're out in public and in buildings, because that really reduces the droplets and the aerosols that carry those viruses. Wash your hands, do it often, stay hydrated, eat and sleep well.
You know,
those are the same sorts of things that we tell people to do for COVID.
Exactly. And I think that was one of the reasons why we didn't see the incidents last year, along with the fact that there were fewer travelers, which would have dispersed the ability for the influenza to make its way from the southern hemisphere up this way, because I believe we study what's going on in the southern hemisphere during their winter flu season to determine what we're going to be having to prepare for up here. Is that your understanding?
Yeah, that's my understanding. And also, we get advice from the World Health Organization, WHO, and also the CDC, the Center for Disease Control. And the CDC updated their guidelines just 3 days ago on October 15th. I guess that's 4 days ago on October 15th. And people can go to the CDC, cdc.gov, if they want to read that directly. But they recommend to reduce the risk of being infected with the Delta variant and possibly adding it to others, wear a mask indoors, in public, if you're in an area of substantial or high transmission. In Iowa, we are in an area of high substantial and high transmission. So we really, really ought to pay attention to that. You may be vaccinated. You may be vaccinated twice. You may have the booster, but you can still get COVID-19 and not know it and be a spreader. So wearing a mask really helps.
And that's part of the reason why you're wearing a mask, is you're trying to protect others as well as you and your family members. That's for sure.
That's right. Some masks are better at protecting you, and some masks are better at protecting others. But the surgical masks that are inexpensive and readily available do a good job of protecting both.
Now, we have talked in the past and emphasized, it seems like what I would like to refer to, there's a good schematic that they call the Swiss cheese method of helping to prevent your exposure to COVID, for example, or influenza, those kinds of things. It's all the same basic idea. Can you explain a little bit about what that approach is?
Well, if you think about Swiss cheese, it has holes in the slices. You slice it up, and because of the little voids that occur during the processing of the Swiss cheese, each slice has holes in it. And think of the viruses trying to get through a stack of these slices of Swiss cheese, and some are going to go directly through a hole, but they may meet another slice that'll block them and so on. It's just a way to visualize all of the different things that can help prevent transmission of the virus. And those are physical distancing, hand hygiene, coughing etiquette, avoiding crowds, good ventilation, getting vaccines.
And masks.
Yes.
So it's a layer effect. You're putting in multi-layers.
Right, and the more of these things you do, that's like the more pieces of Swiss cheese, the more you're blocking those holes for direct transmission.
You know, it's that same image you can use somewhat when you're looking at filter systems. If you have different levels of filtration in your home, for example, my heating and cooling system circulates the air through the house, and to cut down on particulate matter, I've got a three-layer system. I've got a real coarse filter that filters out the bigger particles, and then I've got another filter that takes out intermediate, and then I've got a HEPA filter that takes out those small particulates. And so the air within the house is a lot more, it's close, it's not pure, but it's got a lot of the particulates out, which makes it a lot cleaner in the house. Although I have three little munchkins called cats and dogs that add to the difficulty of keeping the air clean, but that filter system helps. And it's the same idea with particulates you're trying to keep out at a smaller level. And the HEPA filter is a specialized filter that is used in medical situations, clean room situations.
Yes, and just to keep that in your mind, think of those slices of Swiss cheese, and each slice is another thing that you can do to help prevent the spread of the virus.
Okay, so probably the big three things right now for us to practice during this upcoming season are wear a mask. If you're in, go ahead, Sam.
Well, wear a mask, avoid crowds, and wash your hands.
Sounds like a good thing to me. And, you know, for a while we were using 6 feet or 2 meters as a physical distance guide, but you have got to adjust depending upon what your situation is, because this is an aerosol. It's not the droplet idea. These little particles can spread for many feet, and depending upon how the air is circulating, you've got to keep all of that in mind, your situation.
Well, to be correct, the COVID-19 virus does spread by droplets as well as aerosol. And so the 2 feet, the 2 meters or 6 feet distance helps reduce the droplets that you encounter. But as you point out, the aerosol goes on it stays airborne and gets circulated by our air handling system in buildings and so on. So when you're in a confined space, you really need to wear a mask.
Great news. Great advice, Sam. Thank you. Hang on, and we'll take a break. a little taste of Brahms' Hungarian Dance Number 1. And Sam, that instrumentation is a special kind of sound. We're going to be presenting our KHOI listeners with a new program airing soon. Can you tell us about it?
Well, Mike, that music sounds like a symphony orchestra. not a municipal band, or not a quintet, but that's a true orchestra with the strings and the brass and the woodwinds and the percussion, the whole works. We're going to use that as a theme for our upcoming series of concerts from the Central Iowa Symphony. Mike Metz, that's you, Mike, and I are co-hosting and presenting the concerts on KHOI Radio. We're going to air each concert twice. And the Central Iowa Symphony is a wonderful resource in the central part of Iowa, a very good orchestra. They offer 5 concerts per year, starting with a band shell concert in the summertime, open to everybody, and there's plenty of room. And I don't want to say that it's a pops concert, because a lot of times the music is not necessarily pops. But residents in the Ames area can enjoy 8 concerts from the municipal band in June and July, and then the first Thursday of August is when the Central Iowa Symphony gives us a concert at the band shell. The other 4 concerts are in the Ames City Auditorium. That's the home to the orchestra. And they typically are the first weekends of October, December, March, and May. And Maestro Eric McIntyre, professor of music from Grinnell College, has been the maestro conducting the Central Iowa Symphony and its music director for more than 10 years now. We had about 18 months of no concerts because of the pandemic, but things are starting to come back, and it's just been exciting. The first concert this season was the 9th of October. We have the recordings, and they'll be produced and aired on KHOI in the very near future.
Right. We don't quite have those times set yet, but we'll sure let our listeners know as soon as we determine that. So thank you, Sam. Is there anything else you want to add before we slide out of here to our next guest?
Well, I would like to say that Maestro McIntyre has a tremendous job of finding music that engages all the different kinds of players that we have in the orchestra. In other words, you need to have some piece for the timpani, something for the tuba, something for the strings, and so on. And so every year when he sets out to put a season together, he has a broad theme, and then each of those 4 concerts in the city auditorium may have specific themes, like maybe in December it might be more Christmas music, or in the spring young artists competition performers, that sort of thing. And so he balances the rental of the music, the availability of the music, what's interesting to our audience in terms of, you want a balance of new and familiar. And so he does a wonderful job. And I just really praise the Central Iowa Symphony for what it brings to our community.
That sounds great. So, again, we'll let our KHOI listeners know that just to pay attention, and we'll be announcing when those will be aired here. I know they performed their first symphony, and so that will be available soon. Thank you, Sam.
You're welcome, Mike.
And if you are just tuning in at 16 minutes after the hour, I am Mike Metz, along with Pat Schlierbaum and engineer Mike Murphy. Pat, you had an opportunity to visit with the candidate, Joe Anderson, who's running for the Nevada School Board opening. What can you tell us?
Yeah, on Saturday mornings at the Farm Grounds Cafe, right downtown Nevada.
Right.
Very handy location, and what a busy business. This has really become quite a destination for Saturday mornings. And, yeah, we had Austin and Charles Good a week ago Saturday, and then we got a recording of Joe Anderson. And, boy, I might point out that there'll be another one this Saturday at 9 a.m. at the Farm Grounds. And it's what an opportunity to meet these community-minded citizens that want to improve the Nevada community through working with the local school board.
And it's great that we can do this on KHOI, that's for sure. So let's listen to that interview.
Okay.
Hello, all. My name is Joe Anderson. I'm a candidate for school board here in Nevada. I was elected to school board in 2017, so I'm at the end of my four-year term, and I'm running again. A little bit about myself. I'm 53 years old. I was born in Sheraton, Iowa, but my family moved here to Nevada when I was about 13 months old. We've been here in one form or fashion ever since. I moved away briefly for a few times. I always came back. I never stayed away long. Nevada's just kind of part of me. I'm joined here today by my wife, Cindy, Lucinda. I think many of you probably know her from the library where she retired from a couple years ago. And before that, she was a teacher for 27 years. And also her sister, my sister-in-law, Jeannie, is here as well. When you see one, you often see the other. Like I said, I've been a resident of Nevada most of my life. I have two older brothers. All three of us graduated from Nevada High School. We all chose to raise our families here. Numerous nieces and nephews have been through the system and are currently in the system. 1986 graduate from Nevada, and from there I went on to Iowa State. I got a degree from Iowa State in economics, majoring in economics. I began a career as a real estate appraiser, and I've been employed as a real estate appraiser for the Iowa Department of Transportation in Ames for 25 years next month. I really enjoy that. I get to travel around the state, not as much today as I used to, but I got to go a lot of places I'd never seen before and worked in a lot of places that were very interesting. So it's been a great job for me, and I still enjoy doing it, but I am looking forward to retirement someday soon. My wife and I have one son who's an 11th grader here in Nevada. That's the overview on me and all my personal stuff. I'm proud of what we've done and accomplished with the school board over the past 4 years. But when you're on the school board or city council or any other thing like that, the work is never done. When one thing's done, it's time to start another. So I'm excited about what we've done the last 4 years and equally excited about what we can do going forward as well. And always easy to reach. Telephone, email, social media. If you reach out to me, I will respond 100% guaranteed. That's been my record over the past 4 years, and I plan for that to continue. So I'm always happy to take any questions here from you today or any time in the future. But there's a lot of gray area between, it's not this side and that side. There's a lot of gray area in between. It's not necessarily choosing this or choosing that. It's listening to everybody, giving everybody options, flexible as we can to accommodate everybody. Because whatever decision you make, if you make it decision A or decision B, and you've got to pick one, you're going to have an awful lot of unhappy people, and not very many people are going to be happy. What's important to do is to listen, to have flexibility, and to make this a school for everybody, where everybody can find a place, be comfortable, feel safe, feel like they're getting a great education, no matter their particular family situation, their particular child's situation. It's got to be for everybody. And we take that into account and think about that three times anything comes up. We know one decision isn't going to make everyone happy. another decision is going to make everyone happy. But we try and incorporate flexibility and options for families because everybody is after something different from this school.
That was very helpful. This early in the morning, for me, the term I was looking for was the right deal that we've been called best practice. Okay, so the decisions were made by and large on best practice and the incorporating the person with the right deal. So that was the term I was looking for. Sorry for
No, that's great. You know, I'm the same way. I haven't had enough coffee yet to make it here, so I'm probably just saying a lot of things that don't make sense, maybe. But but best practices, yeah, absolutely. We work with that where I work over at the Iowa DMT. You know, we talk about that all the time. One issue I've discovered is it's hard to figure out sometimes what the best practice is because we have a lot of experts who can't agree on what the best practices are. And nothing illustrates that more than the COVID and mask issue that's been going on for a year and a half now. The CDC tries to tell us what's the best practice. The state of Iowa tries to tell us what the best practice is. Through the Department of Public Health, through the governor, through the legislature, all the way down to Story County Public Health and our city council. Not one of them can agree. Ever. That's just the fact and the truth. Often our options as a school board member have been very limited in this regard. We've been told what to do and commanded what to do by powers that are greater than us. So our options are not always as clear and as wide as we would like them to be, but we do the best we can with the information that we have. Now, not everything is that cloudy. Best practices, you're talking about an educational setting in the classroom. That's why we hire great teachers. You know, I'm not a teacher. I'm not an educator. I'm not going to pretend to be one. I'm not going to pretend that I know how to teach math better than our math teachers. I'm not going to pretend I know how to teach welding, ag mechanics, science, phys ed, coach football, do anything better than the people that we've hired to do it because they are professionals. They're passionate about what they do. I trust them, and I hold their opinion extremely highly. And when they speak, I listen. School board's role in addressing bullying and student conduct in general is to adopt policies against it. It is the first step, and that is something we've done. Absolutely, every school board has to do it and has done it. The school board needs to work with administration, teachers, parents, kids, families to make sure that those policies are fairly and equally enforced. You've got to make sure the consequences are clear and the expectations for behavior are clear as well. In my 4 years on the school board, incidents of bullying, things of that matter, that have come to me as a school board member have been very few and far between. They do get to the board on occasion, but it's not very often. And I'm with you. I read a lot of it on social media, and it frustrates me because putting it on social media does not do anything to solve the problem. So it's not the best way to advocate for a kid. It's not the best way to advocate for a family. If people are dissatisfied and they're not getting satisfaction through the normal channel, which is to deal with it at its closest situation, with the teacher, with the building administrators, such as the principal, with the superintendent, it's got to come to the board. And I guarantee you, the board will listen, and the board will get action. But those problems have to come to the board.
So they're
not from parents and families. If I wasn't on social media, I wouldn't hear anything from it, from parents and families. What I hear comes from our school administrators. And they do a very good job of keeping us informed. They have to file an annual report with the state on bullying, which is available online, the Department of Education website. It's not a very detailed report. It's basically a report of the number of incidences. And I can tell you the data compares extremely well with other school districts. Very, very low numbers of founded cases of bullying. So, you know, when families or parents get on social media and tell us and say that the school does nothing about these issues, I completely disagree. I completely disagree. But, the policies and the system is there to help families. It's not there to keep families away or at arm's distance. It's there to give families a vehicle to get results. If their kid or any kid that they know is getting bullied, harassed at school, that set of policies and that system is there for them to use to require action. And if anyone has any trouble navigating that system or doesn't know what to do, doesn't know where to start, call me. Call any board member. We'll help you get started. But the first place can't be to go to the board. You know, we have jobs, we have families, we're not eyes and ears in the buildings. You know, those problems need to try to be solved as close to the situation as we can. And as we don't, if someone feels like they're not getting satisfaction, we widen that circle a little bit. And it will get results. I promise you. Someone's messing with my kid, maybe my nieces and nephews, I better hear about it.
So, Joe, we shouldn't believe everything we read on the internet? Is that what you're saying?
Well, only the things that I put on there. You can believe that. I'm sure there is change on the horizon. I don't have a clue what it is. I mean, that's just honest and being honest and blunt as I can. You know, we roll with the punches. We watch what the legislature and governor does every day in every session, just like you all do. And when they tell us something we got to do, I guess we got to do it. But, you know, there's only so much power we have as school board members to affect those kind of decisions. You know, we provide our priorities to state legislature and the governor every year as a school board what we would like to see, what we would like to see happen, and how much credence is put in that is hard to say. But you know, just the short answer, yes, there's change, but no, I don't know what it is. We'll see when the next, find out a lot when we elect a governor next time and a legislature. That's a main driving force, but we do the best here in Nevada with the flexibility and the resources we're provided. It's in my extreme interest to keep things as local as possible. I want as many decisions kept here in Nevada with our local board as possible, because what's right for Nevada isn't what's right for everybody, and what's right for everyone else isn't what's right for Nevada. And I'm elected to be on the Nevada School Board, so I'm doing what's best for Nevada.
Well, but
we get to the masks.
Cross lines between the city and the school and everything involved.
Oh, city and school.
All of us.
We get along really good. I mean, when there's areas where the city and school can cooperate and it makes sense for both to do so, we do it. Now, not every project is tailor-made for a city-school cooperative project, but when it's right and when it makes sense and when it's practical, the city and school together can achieve a lot more together than sometimes we can when we're apart. You know, take the baseball stadium, the new baseball stadium out of Sephora. That was something that the school could have done by itself, but in a partnership with the city, we got a really nice facility done. And we can look at various, you know, Gaines Hall has been transitioned from the city to the school. Tons of projects all over where we're able to cooperate and it makes sense, and I don't see that changing at all.
I was just going to say, I see a lot of things of people saying stuff about how, well, that doesn't affect us, that's not about us, and that's like, well, if it's anything to do with America, then it affects us because we're Americans. We're a part of America. So.
Well, I see, you know, my role as a school board member, and I don't turn a blind eye to everything that's going on in the world around me. Obviously, you can't do that these days. You just can't. Even if you wanted to, you couldn't do it. But I try not to be influenced too much by what I read, see in the news and what's going on in other places around me. I'm focused on doing what's good for the data. That's what it's always been. That's what it will be. And if people, the voters here in Nevada, like that in a school board candidate, then I hope they vote for me. But if they don't, and they want someone that is in it to change the world by being on Nevada school board, then go for it, I guess.
Well, that's not what I'm meaning that anything that happens in America affects us, whether we like it or not.
Well, one thing, Tom, going back to this whole thing with the state and the local school boards, I hate to open this can of worms every time, but when we talk about masks, it just makes my head want to explode, because we don't have options. Does it make sense that masks are optional in our classrooms, but they're required on our buses? I mean, raise your hand if that makes sense. I suppose it could. Everyone's closer together in a bus, closer confined. But does that make sense? No, but we don't have the option. The people who are against masks hate that their kids have to wear them on the bus. The people who are in favor of a mask requirement hate that it's optional in our classes. But we don't have a choice when it comes to the buses. The federal and state government has told us, this is what you must do on buses. But you have a little more flexibility in your classroom. And that's been the case the minute since COVID came up. It is, everyone's telling us what to do, and people may think that, oh, the school law is changing, they can't make up their mind, they're just doing whatever the political ones tell them to do. No, we're doing it. Sometimes we're doing what we're forced to do.
Well, I guess I'd like to thank Joe and Steve for coming out and answering everybody's questions, and almost 2 hours later, so.
Wow. Thanks to everybody for coming.
And Pat, thank you for that recording of Joe Anderson, the incumbent candidate for the Nevada School Board. And it sounds like we'll have another interview this coming Saturday at Farm Grounds.
Yes, and Luke Spence is the man who is coordinating this outreach. And boy, it's really wonderful outreach that it is. And that was his wife, Stephanie.
Okay. Okay, thanks again. It's if you're just tuning in, it's about 26 minutes before the hour, and thank you for staying with us. I'm Mike Metz, along with Pat Schlerbaum and Mike Murphy. Hello, Susan Guiasta. How are you today?
Hey, good to be here.
Yeah, and I think our listeners are beginning to equate that particular music with our guest today, Keith Abram. Welcome, Keith. Susan, do you have anything for our listeners before we visit with Keith?
Well, we have a city council workshop tonight on bicycle infrastructure that starts at 6 p.m., Again, we're seeking those interested in some of the multimodal forms of transportation around Ames to tune into that workshop. to become educated on the process, to provide feedback. So this is, to my knowledge, the first time we've done something like this ahead of some of the planning that we do for funding some of these larger projects. So the council had requested this kind of educational presentation along with feedback session as just kind of a different way to garner some more information on people's opinions on our transportation network, sort of beyond the motorist. So
sounds
kind of exciting.
Yeah, sounds great to be able to get the community folks interested in participatory here.
Yeah, and now Keith has so many things. I'm afraid to take up too much time. We have such busy weeks coming up, and I know that we're going to touch on those in the weeks to come. So we can jump right into Keith's project.
All right, Keith, let's get rolling here. What have we got? I think Franklin Park might be one of those.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Good morning, Mike, and everybody else. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so one of the things that we've been doing at Franklin Park, it's taken a couple of years, but when you talked about the residents getting involved and participating in things, this started with having some conversations with residents and just finding out what they wanted within the park. So based on that information, we went ahead and did some improvements. We added a two-bay swing, and then what we've been doing when we've been doing renovations with playground equipment, we've been adding a 4-foot concrete border around the playgrounds. But then we've also added a shelter to the park, and along with the shelter, we have grills and picnic tables and so on, a drinking fountain, and some lighting. And then next year, what's going to happen at Franklin is Public Works is going to be adding a shared use path going through the park, you know, from west to east. We'll tie up with Baker Subdivision, which is the old middle school site. So what we're doing is we want to, with all of that, we obviously want to celebrate anytime that we do these types of projects. So next week, Thursday, October 28th, we will have a ribbon cutting at 5:00. Mayor Hala, and we'll have council members and Parks and Recreation Commission members will be there. But one of the fun things that we're doing, last time we did this was at Duff Avenue Park, but we're bringing vehicles from other departments out to the park. We'll have those lined up. So we'll have a fire truck and a police car, something from Public Works, Electric, Parks and Recreation will have a vehicle there. We'll have some other tables there as well, so people in the neighborhood can come and bring their kids, check out the trucks. It was a huge success the last time we did it. But also, being so close to Halloween, we will have some treats that we'll be handing out for people. So that's next week, and that starts, the trucks will be there at 4:00, so 4 to 5, bring the kids out, come out and talk to staff, and then we'll have the ribbon cutting at 5:00.
So it's a truck or treat, huh? Or truck and treat.
Yeah. However, probably an and will be a good thing, because I think people will, you know, always, and it's always fun watching young kids, you know, when they get up next to some of those big dump trucks and fire trucks and police cars, and staff is great. You know, they'll let them sit in there, let them honk the horn, they'll do different things, maybe put the siren on. So staff is really, really good with the young children at these events.
Great. How about Ada Hayden? What's the work? Has it been completed up there?
Yeah, so we there too with the fishing pier, we've been doing some renovations to that. And if you haven't been up there, you should get up there and take a look. They will be projected to finish the project this week. And what we did is we leveled out the fishing pier. We took off all the decking boards, took out some pilings, all the railings, and we put in a different railing system and new decking. And I believe the first part of the week, they're going to be finishing up with some paths, to new walkways from the trail to the fishing pier. And we're actually doing a ribbon cutting for that one on Wednesday, November 3rd at 5 p.m. And again, it's a great amenity. It was designed you know, for people with mobility issues, anybody that struggles, kids, being able to get out there on that fishing pier and fish. And one of the things that we did, too, is with the railings, we do have a couple of areas, pretty large areas with lower railings. So if you are in a mobility device, you can still fish and not have that that railing, you know, kind of being in your way when you're bringing in the lunkers, Mike.
Speaking of mobility, where are we at with the landing, the small craft landing operation there?
Yeah, yeah, so the accessible kayak launch,
right,
is a adaptive kayak launch. So we've contracted with Snyder & Associates, and they have just given us a preliminary design for that, and we're looking at it. We had some suggestions, so they're taking a look at that. And hopefully we can still yet this fall get the path from the parking lot down to the water. And there's a, what they call is a bulkhead. It'll be a large chunk of cement that we'll have to go down probably 4 feet into the to the ground. And then this this accessible dock and launch, what it'll do is it'll attach to that bulkhead. So what we're looking to do is get the concrete work done this fall, and then next spring we can just attach the launch to it. One of the things that we're working through, Mike, is normally, you know, the water level at the lake is usually about 70, at a height of 74. And right now it's less than 72. So one of the things that we're trying to do is with ADA, the slopes for the walkway and then for the gang plank down to get to the dock have to be less than a certain percentage. So we're doing, that's what we're, one of the things we're trying to work through, to make sure that we're compliant and the people that are using it are able to use it easily without having a lot of trouble. So that's one of the things that that we're working through right now. But the dock itself won't go in until next spring.
Sounds great. I drove by Miracle Park. I didn't have a time to stop, but gosh, there was a lot of activity going on. That was Saturday when I was by there. What's going on there?
Yeah, well, there's just a lot of activity. People just stopping out and playing on the playground equipment and stuff. But Saturday we had our last Miracle League game for the fall season. And again, Miracle League is for individuals with physical or intellectual disabilities. And we had, I think, 23 players this fall, and they play for six Saturdays. And like I said, Saturday was the last one. We did some filming out there. Susan's staff was out there getting some video to so we can put it on our website and so on. But that was something that was happening as well. So
I would tell you that this is the time to get out to the parks because it's getting colder, and this is the time of year that we look at winterizing.
And that's one of the things, you know, we always keep looking at the temperatures and when are we going to drop below 32. And one of the things towards the end of this month, we will start winterizing. And with our drinking fountains, we usually do those first. And then the restrooms will be the last thing that we'll shut down. We try to keep them as open as long as we can. Our high-use parks, Ada Hayden and some others, you know, we do bring out some porta-potties. So there are still some facilities there throughout the winter time, but yeah, get out to the park. Beautiful time with the leaves changing and these awesome days, cool mornings, warm afternoons. Great time to be outside.
And it, for the animal lovers, there's a lot of bird activity as migrants pass through. Squirrels are storing away their little goodies for the winter, so you're going to see all kinds of little critters. It makes if you're walking your dog, it sure makes it interesting for the pooch, that's for sure. Anything else, Keith, that you want to share with our listeners?
That's good for right now. You know, we talk a lot about the parks and being outside, but we do have a number of different activities. We got youth basketball coming up. We're taking registrations, adult basketball, our adult volleyball programs, underway. We always have fitness classes, new sessions starting. So if you haven't participated in any programs, you know, go to our website, AmesParkRec.org or cityofames.org, and check out all the offerings and get involved.
Sounds great, Keith. I was down on East 13th as well. There was children's soccer games going on, and gosh, there were some little kids. The ball seemed bigger than they were, but they were really trooping along. It was fun to watch them. So, thank you. Yeah, thanks, Keith Abraham from Parks and Rec, and Susan Guiasta, thank you, Communications Officer from the City of Ames.
Thanks for having us.
Mm-hmm.
Daylight come and me want go home. Work all night and I drink a rum.
Daylight come and me want go home.
Well, Anna, we don't want you to go home yet. We want to find out, what have you got for us and our KHOI listeners?
Hi, it's Tuesday as I try to tempt you to listen to KHOI. Now, Mike Metz, why are people jealous of agricultural majors? So again, why are people jealous of agricultural majors?
Oh, boy. I don't know. Why, Anna?
Because they always get a job in their field.
I thought they were outstanding in their fields, but okay. Got me.
Well, as well. And speaking of being experts in the field, Chef Donna and Farmer Lana, the dynamic hosts of the Donna Lana Kitchen Show, are the best, and they will have an encore presentation featuring a lecture from Montana organic grain farmer Bob Quinn. Now, Bob Quinn talks about his farm experience and his book, Grain by Grain, in a lecture at Iowa State University. Now, the Donna Lana Kitchen Show will be a repeat, but they'll be back with a live show on October 26th. Now, you might be wondering, what is this Donna Lana Kitchen Show? Well, the Donna Lana Kitchen Show talks about food, farming, recipes, advice, and opinion. Chef Donna and Farmer Lana explore the local food scene with lively discussion and good humor when? On Tuesdays at noon and then repeated at 7 p.m. All right, so Sam Wormley was a guest and he stayed on, so let me ask him a question. What did the science book say to the math book?
Can you prove it?
Ooh, that's a good one. But nope, you've got problems. Now, Mike Matt, how do the farmers get the highest marks in their math exam?
I didn't catch the first part of that. I'm sorry.
That's all right. So how did the farmers get the highest marks in the math exams? You didn't get it because you were so enamored by the joke before.
Yeah. I don't know how, Anna.
They were all protractors. So. Now, that was a great reaction to my very funny joke. So if you want to get the highest marks on math and science problems on the exam, we should listen to Sam and you today at 4:30 for Science Bites. So what will we learn today?
Well, we're joined by Mary Richards, and we're going to discuss some of the season that's approaching, our autumnal season, and its effects, and then we'll devote a little bit of time on the COVID pandemic. So that's what we're doing. And that's 4:30 to 5, Tuesday afternoons, and rebroadcast Wednesday at 8:30.
I hope that we tell people why seasons even happen.
Yeah, so that was not my favorite part of local talk, thinking about preparing for winter. But we will move on to that and stay in the moment where it is fall, which is my favorite season. Now, after listening to Science Bites and increasing your IQ, you can later tune in at 8:30 p.m. to listen to the Heart to Heart Messages show. So my guest is Hope Raymer, and the reason why I know her guest, Hope, is because of a sweet corn festival in Fairborn, Ohio. I visited this Green County Habitat for Humanity booth and met Hope's dad, and the other volunteers invited me to join their Habitat for Humanity board, and I accepted the invitation. Now, Hope's dad, Jeff, served as the board president, and we became friends, which led to me meeting his family, including Hope. Now, I left in Ohio in 2013 and thought everyone forgot about me. But then earlier this month, actually in September, I received this LinkedIn message. What are you up to these days? I'm finishing up my PhD in higher education and will be a graduate in December. I just got married in February. I work at Ohio History Connection and Human Resources. My parents are fine. They're still in Texas and now they're retired. And then when I replied about where I'm living these days, Hope sent this message. Wow, that is so cool. Why Iowa? I should come and see you. Iowa is beautiful. Lots of great cornfields. So that was a great reintroduction to Hope. And Hope told me that she spoke at a conference about her adoption experience and how it affected her scholarly work. So we will discuss tonight on the Heart to Heart Messages her paper that she wrote that is titled Adopted, Alone, and Accomplished, A Scholar's Identity of Being Adopted. Hope was adopted from an orphanage in Japan. So we'll talk a little bit about that. Okay, do you know what song, after learning a little bit about Hope, what song do you think I selected for the music break?
Love is a many splendid thing.
And the answer would be? That is correct. So if you want to know the correct song for the music break, you'll have to tune in when? 8:30 p.m. on Heart to Heart Messages. Now, Mike Murphy, in honor of the Donalana Kitchen Show repeat show with Montana organic farmer Bob Quinn, let me ask you this, Mike. What is the grain trucker's favorite band? Again, what is the grain trucker's favorite band?
The grain trucker's favorite band would be... I got nothing.
It's Hall & Oates.
Oh.
So, will we hear any hits from Hall & Oates on You Name It this Thursday from 2 to 4 p.m.? What songs will keep us company as the grain truckers listen to the musical tour throughout that afternoon?
Well, we will not be hearing any Hall & Oates. We will be celebrating Paul Simon at 80. Paul Simon turned 80 years old on October 13th. And we'll be featuring songs by Simon and Garfunkel and from Paul's solo career and a lot of great interpretations of Paul's body of work from over the years.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And will you be playing any of his wife's songs for Edie Brickell?
No.
Okay, I'll put that request in there. I just was using that as a show off and that I really like Edie Brickell and know Paul Simon's wife's name. Mm-hmm. All right. So, be sure to listen to You Name It this Thursday. I forgot. What is that? From 2 to 4? 4 to 8?
It's from 2 to 4 by my calculation.
That's right. I would use my side list by my calculation. So listen to You Name It this Thursday from 2 to 4. Now, speaking of science, Pat.
Yes.
Here's another joke connected to the Donalana Kitchen Show that's an interview, again, with that farmer. So what did the farmer get after crossing an owl with the goat?
Oh, an owl and a goat sounds pretty extreme to me, but it would be a sight to behold. I'm not sure what it would be.
It would be a hootenanny.
Oh, yeah. That's a knee slapper.
That's a new snapper. You should see Mike's face when it comes to that reaction. I think it's a little over the top. But it is an enthusiastic reaction to my very, very funny joke. Now, speaking of Hootenanny, if you don't keep it on KHOI 89.1 FM to listen to great programming like What? All Things Piano with Tom Russell this morning after local talk, the Donalana Kitchen Show, you name it, Community Bookshelf, Heart to Heart Messages, Science Fight, and those are just a few to name. Of all your listening options to make your day a great one. Now, to close out the Tune In Tuesday Heart to Heart Messages, we're going to give this back to Sam. Sam, my doctor said, it's not a guess. I'm just going to, everybody listen. My doctor said I need to cut back my sodium intake, but I tend to take everything he says with a grain of salt. Da-da-da. Now, do you take everything? No, you don't. Well, I'm still turning the show back over to you.
Oh, Anna, thank you. Sorry, Sam.
That was really, really tasty.
KHOI provides a platform for citizen and public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI. KHOI is a community nonprofit, nonpartisan media. This program is produced by Lynn Carey and Ursula Rudenberg. A tip of the chapeau to engineer Mike Murphy, and thank you, neighbor Pat Schlerbaum. Thank you, Sam. You heard from KHOI's Sam Wormley, Nevada School Board candidate Joe Anderson, Susan Guiasta, Communications Officer, along with Director of Parks and Recreation for the City of Ames, Keith Abraham, and KHOI's Anna Magnuson. I've been your host, Mike Metz.
You have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Remember that you can also hear it online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. Our website is khoifm.org. Consider becoming a member and making KHOI your community radio station with your financial support. Go to our website, khoifm.org, and press the yellow donate button to begin the process of becoming a member.
Yep, our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, Ballad of Kate Shelley. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! At 8 a.m. and All Things Piano at 9 a.m. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting KHOI. And
see you again on the radio.